Kelly, can I ask you some advice about women?
Sure, Mark. We've done 4 podcasts together now, so that's a totally appropriate request.
Well, it's just that I'm about to go on this blind date, and I'm afraid I'm not going to hit it off with her.
Oh, who's the lucky girl?
Her name is Tatiana, and if things go well, I may just be able to get a Spectre decoding device out of the relationship.
Wait, what?
Yeah, she's from Russia, but we're meeting in Turkey. The heads of our secret services set the whole thing up. I'm really excited about it.
Mark, now you're just describing the plot to the James Bond novel, From Russia with Love, and aren't you married anyway?
Oh yeah, you're right. Well, you want to just do a podcast about the book and movie instead?
I think our listeners would probably enjoy that more.
Okay, then everyone grab your booby trap briefcase.
Or your floating brand trick cigarettes.
And come along with us as we explore James Bond here in the books.
And there in the movies. Part 5, The Setup. As always, we'll start with a synopsis of the book. James Bond is marked for death by the Soviet counterintelligence agency SMERSH in Ian Fleming's masterful spy thriller and the novel that President John F. Kennedy named one of his favorite books of all time. SMERSH stands for Death to Spies, and there's no secret agent they'd like to disgrace and destroy more than 007, James Bond. But ensnaring the British Secret Service's most lethal operative will require a lure so tempting even he can't resist. Enter Tatiana Romanova, a ravishing Russian spy whose defection springs a trap designed with clockwork precision. Her mission? Seduce Bond, then flee to the West on the Orient Express. Waiting in the shadows are two of Ian Fleming's most vividly drawn villains, Red Grant, SMERSH's deadliest assassin, and the sinister operations chief, Rosa Klebb, 5'4" of pure killing power.
Very nice. Rosa Klebb! So, Kelly, what... Overall, what did you think of the book?
I thought it was pretty good. I would say I would give it like a B. It wasn't my favorite of the ones we've read, but it also was nowhere near my least favorite. I thought it was good. My main qualm with it was that they spent close to 100 pages, I think, talking about
just Russia.
I don't know. I got kind of bored with that whole sequence, and it was pretty interesting hearing Red Grant's backstory and how he became a villain, because I feel like that doesn't often, like, the Bond villains don't often get a whole lot of backstory or build up, so that was kind of cool, but I think they went a little too heavy-handed with it, because, I felt like I was practically halfway through the book before Bond even showed up, so it was just kind of...
Well, and to add to that, it was... even longer until James Bond and Tatiana met. Like, the whole setup was the government's getting these two together, and it seemed like it was at least 2/3 into the entire novel before they actually met in the book.
Yes.
So
that's really true.
And on that note, it was good. I liked the premise that they were getting together. They're trying to trap Bond with his weakness, which is women. But it made me literally laugh out loud when I realized that they were basically these two governments setting their main spies up on a blind date, and like pruning them and, what's going to happen? Are you going to go all the way? Or, it's like a little bit ridiculous. And I had to suspend my disbelief just a little with the fact that the English went for it, that they fell into the trap, and the whole, in both the movie and the book, they were like, it's probably a trap, but let's do it anyway. It's too good of a bait to ignore. Like, what? Really? That's your go-to plan there?
I know. And I did think that was even more the case in the book. Like, in the movie, you felt like they were a little more suspicious, or at least I got that impression. But in the book, they were just like, okay, let's see what happens. Yeah, that is true about them meeting. It just felt like, because like you said, I was intrigued by that plot line. Like, oh, they're gonna, she's a double agent and whatnot. But it was like waiting forever and ever and ever. And all the stuff with Darko Kareem was kind of cool. But even that, I was like, when are you going to meet?
Right. Yeah, it was a lot of setup. And in a Bond book, we want to get to the Bond stuff.
Which, speaking of Bond stuff, this was the first book, right, that they actually had gadgets?
Right. We don't see Q yet. I'm still waiting to see him. And I don't know much about the book series and if Q is a character or if it's just Q Branch. So, like, I'm still waiting for that character in the books. And talking about Bond's character, too, there's a really kind of intriguing passage where they go to assassinate the man who started the fight with the gypsy camp. And Bond says that he has a distaste for cold-blooded killing. And I did a double take. I was like, wait, what? You're a spy. Like, that's what you're supposed to do is cold-blooded killing. Like, right? Am I wrong?
Yeah, I know. I totally agree. Because I really thought that those were prereqs for getting a double O.
Exactly,
number.
Yeah.
You had to cold kill a certain number of people.
Yeah. In Casino Royale, it's in the movie at least, it was two. I think in the book, too. And
yeah.
I mean, I guess Fleming is trying to make him more human. You're trying to humanize him, but that's not a way that makes sense to me to humanize, you know, a British spy. And so it was kind of fascinating.
I agree that that's probably their motivation, but it's interesting that that's their motivation because it seemed like in Casino Royale, he was set up to be so much the machine and so cold-blooded and every other sentence is like, and then his cold taciturn face, you know,
right.
Whatever. But then it was like, as we've gone along in these books, he's been getting more and more and more human.
Yeah.
Which you'd think that as he killed more and more and went on all these other missions and was chased around the world by Smersh, you'd think that he would be getting less and less and less human.
Yeah, he'd be hardening
so
a little bit.
Interesting.
Yeah. And you mentioned Darko Kareem too. I really liked him and I felt guilty at times because he's so much, you know, so machismo and sexist at times, but he's one of those guys like you have to love him. I mean, he's just, I don't know. He's in control of the situation and, you know, the country he's in is a little more volatile. So he has to be that way kind of, but you know, it's like you hate to love him and you love to hate him.
I definitely agree because there's some point where he does something ridiculous, like, or I think it's just a flashback that he's telling James about, but he's talking about how he once chained this woman under his desk and like taught her a lesson, and there's this very sexual overtones towards that whole thing. But
that's our Darko. And what a like stereotypical name, Darko? Is that I don't know if that's a common Turkish name or not, but. It was very clear to me that he was a foreigner. You know, it's like, okay, we get it, Fleming. So what about Tatiana for you? To me, she seemed like a little bit more of a flat character than some of the other Bond girls.
Yeah, absolutely. She might just be my least favorite.
Maybe.
Women.
Who would be the runner-up for you? Would it be Tatiana and who else?
Who were the worst?
For worst, yeah. Who's your runner-up for worst?
I liked Solitaire a lot, and Gale Grand was pretty cool. I would say those two were probably my favorite.
Yeah.
What about you?
As far as top, I like I can't remember her name from Casino Royale now. Oh, Vesper Lynd.
Yeah,
I think I like her definitely more in the movie. Yeah, the movie one. She's probably definitely my favorite cinematically. But
I liked
how Fleming used Tatiana to tell us about the Russia scenario. You know, how oppressive it is there, and that they're just basically taking this girl who's, you know, in the prime of her youth, and they're, you know, it's almost like they're pimping her out a little bit, you know, and they're just using her as female bait for this English spy, and they don't tell her the whole plan, and you know, she's being used just as much as everybody else. But you know, so as a plot device, I liked her, but as a character, still kind of flat. So
yeah, I think that's really well said. I had seen the movie From Russia with Love a long time ago, before I ever read this book. And so I remember thinking in the movie, like, well, gee, she's not very interesting. And I thought maybe I just chalked it up to the actress that was playing her. I'm like, oh, she didn't really bring much je ne sais quoi to right. the character, but then I read the book and was like, oh, she's actually
she's a really good actress because she's just as boring as the character. Yeah. Okay, and last but not least, in the book, what did you think about the ending? Cliffhanger much?
What's that?
I said cliffhanger much?
Oh my gosh, yes, cliffhanger. I that was really the first one, unless I'm just completely misremembering, that ended on that kind of a note. Usually it ends with him jetting off with the Bond gal to some exotic location to have some, you know, TLC or whatever, but it was weird. He just went down in a heap, and then it was like, but where's, are there pages missing?
Right, exactly. Like, what? No. And it makes me wonder if Fleming was trying to drive sales a little bit, or, you know, because it seems like more of a marketing thing to end on a cliffhanger. But it was kind of weird how sentimental he was about Tatiana. You know, I don't expect Bond to ever get sentimental, and we'll probably talk about him getting married at some point, because I remember he does in one of the movies. But, and it was just kind of weird, because he told, as he was like passing out from the poison that Rosa Klebb, spoiler by the way, that Rosa Klebb, you know, foot knifed him with, he was like, I've got the best girl in the world. And then he passes out and we don't know what happens. It's just kind of bizarre. I was like, wait, what? It didn't seem like they were that close.
So. I did laugh a little bit at that, because it's like Renee Mathis had burst back onto the scene randomly for like 3 pages.
Right.
And he was like, oh, we'll go out to a nice dinner and I'll get you the most beautiful girl. And like you said, he just has this sort of odd moment of tenderness. And he's like, I already got the most beer.
Maybe it was the poison talking.
Maybe. And also, it made me laugh too that she was always referenced to, like, and then she took all of her clothes off except the black lace ribbon.
Right, which wasn't, this may be getting too personal, but that just didn't do it for me. Like, in the movie, he shows up and she's just completely naked in bed with the lace thing on. And it's like, there's no seduction there. It's just basically like, here's my naked body, you know.
Yep.
I don't know, it was weird. Okay, speaking of the movie, we should take a quick break to listen to an ad from one of our sponsors, and we'll be right back. This episode of James Bond Here and There is brought to you by Fleming Brand Deluxe Booby Trap Briefcase. Don't be caught with last year's shabby equipment. Keep up with the latest trends in espionage by arming yourself with the most extensive and expensive briefcase Fleming Brand has to offer. Miss Amplify, tell them what they get.
Our newest model includes everything you could want. Throwing knives, 20 rounds of ammunition, an AR-7 folding sniper rifle, 20 gold sovereigns, exploding tear gas, Geiger counter, hidden tape recorder, bug detector, industrial laser, proximity mines, underwater camera, taser, jetpack, rocket launcher, x-ray glasses, and so much more!
That's right, ladies. The Fleming Brand Deluxe Booby Trap Briefcase is the cure for what ails you. Fleming Brand. Products for you. You're just going to have to add tones on top of it. And now back to the program. And welcome back. We're now going to talk about the movie from Usher with Love. We would give you a synopsis, but I'd say it's pretty much the exact same. There are small differences, but the major one being that Spectre is running the show instead of Smersh. So you have like an extra level. The movie series had Spectre be the kind of overarching villainous organization. So they're tapping into Smersh. With Rosa Klebb and the other guy who plans this whole thing. And but otherwise, it's the same. I'd say my biggest compliment to the movie was the casting. I thought all the actors did a pretty good job. We had already talked about Tatiana. The character may not have been great as far as the acting, but I felt like she looked the part and she acted how I had imagined her. I thought the actor who played Darko was awesome. Rosa Klebb was exactly how I pictured her. I don't know. What do you think, Kelly?
Yes, I agree. The casting was dead on. And they made so much to do in the movie, or in the book, about her looking vaguely like Greta Garbo and having this sort of icy beauty. And she definitely, I can't recall what that actress's name was, but she embodied all of those things. Like we were just talking about earlier, the book set the bar kind of low.
Right.
For, you know, her character qualities. So all she had to really do was stand around and look icy at people. The but she did a great job.
Yeah, for me, this movie was like a case of amnesia. Because I had watched all these, and I think I've said this before, you know, in my early teens. And so going back and watching them, I really forget how it, I'll say sexist just because I don't have a better word right now. But, you know, it's like they're just assuming that Sean Connery's going to sleep with her. And the whole, she's like flirting with him with the camera recording device. Like, oh, Bond, take me now. It's like, woman, just tell me about the Spectre first. Then we can have sex later is, you know, basically the premise of their conversation. It's like he's being kind of mean and cruel. Like, I don't remember all of this. I just remember the fun gadget briefcase.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the whole thing, I felt like you mentioned that there weren't too many differences, and I agree. I think this is actually, at least of the ones we've talked about so far, this is one of the most faithful movies to the book. But the weird scene where they're sneaking around through the garden, and Red Grant,
oh, yeah,
quote, kills Bond with a garrote.
Right, yeah.
It's just like, oh, but it wasn't him. It was a really ingenious mask, and that didn't need to happen.
But it seemed like they actually killed that guy. That's what was weird to me. It seemed like the one who was walking around looking like Sean Connery actually got murdered. Like it was a way to kill somebody and also train these spies to kill. It was very bizarre. Like I couldn't quite understand what was going on. And on that note, in the book with the openings, while we're talking about openings that don't make sense, there's a masseuse that's giving Red Grant a massage and she's naked, or she's at least topless, I think. But they go into detail about how Red Grant is like sexless and, you know, and all of that. So I'm like, wait, then why is she topless? It was really weird. I was like, I understand. I can see the allure of a topless masseuse, but his character specifically isn't into that, I didn't think. Anyway, it was just weird. I was like, wait a second. I'm so confused right now.
Well, they didn't really seem to go into that in the movie. Like in the book, he was pretty sexless and it made a big thing about how he was just this killing machine crafted around the waxing and waning of the moon or whatever his deal was.
Also kind of a werewolf.
When I was reading that, I was like, is that where they're going with that? I don't know.
I thought it was okay. It was a way to make the villain exotic. You know, if you got to do that if you're writing a Bond book, but it was kind of unexplained. And
It was just funny.
Speaking of funny and not making sense, when they go to the gypsy camp with Darko and let me lay it out for the listeners if you haven't seen the movie. There are these two beautiful gypsy women who are fighting over a man, right? The man can't choose between the two, and so they are having this conflict. So in gypsy law, of course, they need to fight to the death with as little clothes as possible. So They have these two women fight to the death, and of course James Bond gets to watch them do it. And then a fight breaks out with the other Russian guys, and that gets put on hold. So we come back to these two women, and they let James Bond decide, but not before having sex with both the women. I'm like, wait a second, I thought they were fighting over another man, so now they're both gonna have extramarital relations with this guy, and now he's gonna choose which one. Wait, I'm so confused. Like, I feel like I just needed to suspend my disbelief and just say, okay, he gets to have sex with both of them.
Yep, pretty sure there was not more to it than that. They were like, gratuitous naked lady scene, sure.
But yeah,
have him wrestling around, it'll be great. And yeah, I mean, it was like, are they trying to just determine which one's sexual prowess is greater?
Right.
Or they just want to reward him with more sexy times?
Yeah.
But
the whole fight was over another guy. That's the thing that is getting me hung up here. Anyway, sorry. Moving on.
Yeah. No, it was very weird.
The difference I did find the most intriguing in this book versus the movie was that we had mentioned earlier how Bond kind of railed against the cold-blooded killing, but in the movie, he volunteers to do the killing, and Darko takes it over for him and says, no, it must be me, but Bond really wanted to do it, so I thought that was kind of interesting that they went the other complete opposite direction with that when they stayed so loyal to the rest of the book.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'd agree.
So probably a wise choice.
Kind of another thing going sort of veining off of that into the back into our conversation about Draco Kareem, I thought that they did a better job of developing Bonds and Darko's relationship in the book, because he almost had the same level of affection for Darko that he had for Felix Leiter.
Yeah.
And they were very close, and I didn't really think that quite came through in the movie. It just seemed like, you know, they were palling around and stuff, but in the book, when Darko is killed on the Orient Express and Bond finds his body and he's talking about he rehashes this metaphor that he's been using throughout the book about how Darko carried the sun around with him and now the sun had been extinguished forever and all these.
Right.
And it was just a very heavy moment. And
yeah.
It was really sad.
You know, you saying that makes me realize how good Ian Fleming is at the kind of bromance male relationships and just getting it spot on. You know, there's no question about how he feels about M and how he feels about Felix and in this book, Krimi. Yeah, Darko Krimi. That's a good point. Let's end on a good note.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, we did it. So next time we will be reading the book Dr. No and watching the movie that goes along with it by the same title. Kelly, do you want to tell them where they can reach us?
Sure, you can find us on itsjustawesome.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at HearThereSeries.
And we will see you all next time. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks, guys.